These friends, that I so deeply and unfairly treated, so cruelly tormented, it was touching to see how Louis came towards me and gave me his hand. When I wanted to ask him for forgiveness, he interrupted me. "Dear friend," he said, "do not talk further about it. It has already cost you more difficult sufferings than to me, for mental agony is far more painful than the physical. And what I in the time then suffered, it has for me now become a joy that I cannot describe. Now let us be friends, just as in days of old, when we were young and the happy life smiled at us." I asked about his mother, whom I have caused so much grief. "She's as fine now," replied Louis, "but at first she had a hard time finding herself adapting here. Her dazed mind cleared not immediately, then she completed her earthly tabernacle, because the disease sat deeper than only in the physical brain, but by peaceful and appropriate treatment, she has now come to clarity and peace. My desire to throw myself at her feet and ask her for forgiveness, however, he though declined. I do not think it's appropriate that you meet with her yet, because she is still very weak and will not stand by strong emotions, but when she becomes stronger, you probably are just as welcome to her as to us." Louis and Elsa soon left me and returned to their home in a higher sphere, as they had now just come to receive me in my new dwelling. It was with real sadness that I parted from these noble friends, who so lovingly met me and so great doing good for evil. My heartfelt desire, I said it so, was henceforth to be in the opportunity to serve them, and thus in some way, again apply their goodness. We will serve each other, it belongs to us all, as members of the large brotherhood, said Louis, as he pressed my hand in farewell. As I stood there alone and looked after the departing friends, it came over me a strong oppression. What would now be my lot? What would I do? Suddenly my guardian spirit, the bright Delai, stood in front of me. Where he came from and how he had traveled, I am not clear to me. I believe he just descended through space. "Now, my friend," he said, "you have to follow me down to earth. There is no time to lose. There is ongoing heavy fighting, as you helped to foment. It is now your duty to do everything in your ability is to dampen the heat of battle and ward off evil the people are in the process of adding to each other and to themselves. I'd like to be involved, as far as my power's capable," I said. "Show me what I have to do." We were together, or rather, he almost carried me in his strong arms, and soon was we were at the goal. This same town, where I went as a respected and feared man, the scene of my terrible atrocities. It was strange to see it all again, from my current position. This entire physical world that I formerly considered as materially solid, seemed to me now quite unreal. Then, however, my own body seemed comparatively solid. So different, we see the phenomena from different planes. Now I was walking freely through the thickest walls and could see into the people's inside and read their most secret thoughts, as of an open book. But that was not the strangest thing. I made a different experience that aroused my admiration. It was at that place a whole host of bright spirits gathered, all well disciplined and organized as like almost a militarily corps under a high, enlightened leader, and in this troop, I was incorporated as a man in the ranks. Our job was basically to support the idea of freedom struggle that was going on and that called heresy. But we were not on our plain lonely men on the battlefield. The time made angry billows, passions ran high, there were many occasions for the dark to sow hatred and split, to incite to violence and atrocities of all types. They appeared to be less organized. I do not think they had any leader, but they found more willing ears than we, and instigated therefore evil. It was their influence that we now had to counter, at the same time as we had to instill courage and hope of the freedom of thought, persecuted martyrs. Each of us was taking the task that was best suited for his forces and abilities. It fell to my lot to keep watch at a high prelate's with all power fueled persecution of heretics. I was instructed that as often as I could, and especially when he slept, searching to imagine him how wrong he did, and by my own history deter him from continuing on the path he trod. But I was not alone in this watchkeeping, a dark spirit, which largely had his ear, turned seldom away from him. It is strange how powerless the good influences stands, unless that the person it regards, through its own free will and mood, is unleashing it. It was only in the moments when the prelate sometime hesitated what he should be doing, that I got the opportunity to whisper to him a word of caution. When he slept, I had more influence over him. I was able to coax his spirit out body and converse with him. And then he, as well as other criminals in their innermost beings, were not as bad as his work suggested. I could then pull up his lighter sides. I could get him to admit that he had the right to proceed with the ferocity that he perpetrated. I could get him to repent, to whimper like a sick child and promise repentance. But when he went back into his body again and woke up, he was again a slave to the old conceptions which ploughed so deep furrows in his mind. Then it was again that the Dark Watchman came to power. Between him, my opponent and me, it never came to any battle, though I probably felt possessed the power to expel him for now, it had not served anything. He had soon come back with a whole crowd of dark helpers, but we watched each other with mistrustful glances and never left an opportunity to make our influence applicable. I stayed for quite some time in this post but was unable to accomplish much. Then I got to a somewhat lighter and more happy, but also a more painful task. I had to watch over any prisoners who languished in the Inquisition prison. Here was I alone on watch and could very well make myself heard. It was a joy to see how their faces brightened when I gave them the idea of the joy that awaited their faith-strong spirits, when materialistic boundaries fallen off. With strong magnetic deletions could I moreover, not only help them to sleep, but also to some extent alleviate the pain torture inflicted on them. Oh, hell, these executioners, like in cold blood could witness the unfortunate plagues, and they were horrible to behold. It is terrible how deeply a person can decline in brutality and cruelty. One of my prisoners died, and I had the pleasure of taking care of his spirit and bring him up to his bright home. There was a cheer that was indescribable. The whole hosts of bright spirits came to meet him, and escorted him with shouts of joy and victory chants. Self he lay over the whole trip in my arms, still very weak, but with a beatific smile on the lips. As we parted, he thanked me warmly for the little I have been able to help him. But I did not stay up there in the dazzling light sphere where he had his home. I had not been there either, because the light was so intense that I literally suffered thereof in the short while I waited to deliver my burden. I turned back to my post on the earth and stayed there as long the heretic persecutions happened. I now come to a very different stage of my free life. After the service on earth, I returned to the sphere that was my real hometown. I now needed to work on my own development and, in particular, I needed to strengthen me for the new mortal life as I knew awaited me, a life that would be very tough and heavy also, I could understand. It was also with trepidation I thought of this future, but so far it was still very remote. Over a long period of years, it was well over a century after earthly time, I studied at a major university in my realm. But now it was not theology and law I took in, it was especially civics and ethics, illuminated by examples from human development history of the earth, extremely interesting studies, led by prominent teachers. There did my already quite predicted schooled spirit, get a good education, which was then, in latently form, followed me down on my next earth wandering, and become me very happiness and utility. It's amazing what we have much to learn, and how the requirements of knowledge dimensions increasingly grows, in proportion, as we penetrate into the excavations of knowledge. The more we learn, the more we see our gaps in knowledge. But time is not so important, we've got all eternity to us. At the university I met two Russians, for which I took a lot of affection. They were busily employed to study their country's social conditions and determined that the timely opportunity to go down again to participate in the battle for the liberation of their people. Oral was really a chamber scholar. He had been a professor and little studied in public acquisitions, but he had also studied through the history of his country, become a hot advocate for Russia's freedom. Ivan had been in the military and had with disgust been compelled to participate in the subjugation of some unrest in Little Russia. Eventually I was also drawn into their minds and became interested in this people, who possessed so many possibilities, but in all respects were so paralyzed. Particularly I studied their religious sects, which curiously all emerged from the peasant class. The enthusiasm with which these simple people, without any book learning, could sacrifice and suffer persecution for one, in fact, insignificant deviation from the Greek Catholic Church doctrine, even sometimes just from its ritual, meant something captivating, that drew me to them. Oral had a sister named Vera, who also studied at the same college. Even she is an avid enthusiast of the freedom struggle, we knew, would soon break out in Russia. She was a very likable woman with alert eyes of all social issues and a compassionate heart for the suffering of her people must undergo. We often had long debates, we four, the most appropriate way out to achieve reform of the intolerable conditions. Ivan felt that an open revolution, if so bloody, would be the only way out, and he supported eagerly by Vera, while Oral and I however believe in a gradual and comparatively peaceful development to a parliamentary form of government. At this time, it was during the last half of the 1800s, had already become the initial efforts of the Russian people to adorning awareness of the humiliation during which it lived. The crude and cruel Nicholas I had come to power, he swung a stiff rod of iron over his poor people, and the resistance began, whether only in small, single points, to raise their heads. Ivan and Vera immediately wanted to go down to have time to grow up until the battle would come, but the more reticent Oral asked them to wait, because the time was not yet ripe. Long they could however not be restrained. They went, and I decided to follow them. For this, my decisions contributed to no small extent, a more tender feeling for Vera, which awakened within me and had gradually grown strong. There was something in this powerful woman's soul that pulled and drugged me and enchanted me so I finally could not do without her. She had become for me all, the center around which all my thoughts and feelings revolved, gloss over my life. So we wandered around the same time into the earth course matter, without knowing more about our future destinies than we wanted to consecrate ourselves to the holy cause of liberty. 3. In a small town in southern Russia, I was born in 1835 of simple, good-hearted parents. My father was a merchant and brought up well on their little trading. My mother was a pious woman. The little Peter was his parents' eyestone and grew up to be a brisk and dashing boy. Already as a child I had a strong will, that I not gladly gave away. I was not so easy to supervise and educate. But then my parents, and particularly my mother, never treated me hard. I kept a lot of them and obeyed them willingly. An old schoolmaster, however, which would impart me the first teaching and then proceeded with unnecessary severity, soon became my enemy. Against him I was defiant and disobedient, and I played him happy, so when I could, a little startled. Once I hid his hat so he had to go home bareheaded. I had hurried me away before storm broke loose. But when I then heard this expires over an innocent, I went to my antagonist and told him that he had acted unfairly towards my companion, for it was I who hid his hat. He could search the tall chestnut tree in the schoolyard. It became naturally a thorough thrashing and hot threat that I had to quit school if I did not behave me properly. Nothing had been me agreeable, but father wanted me to go left, and I obeyed, though I think I had a feeling that I just learned nothing in this primitive learning institution. However, I had a burning taste for learning and sought all by themselves a great deal of knowledge, so that I was in school long before my peers. Then I also got a better teacher and walked briskly ahead in my studies. When I was 17 years, I came to the University of Moscow. Here I performed at the beginning a happy student life and left the studies behind. My father sent me regularly, after our conditions, write every month plenty money and I let in the youthful frenzy, all the pennies go. But when further wrote and wondered why I had not yet taken any exams, I woke up a feeling of shame within me and I decided to change the way of life. Now, I was instead very diligent and took after a short time a first law degree. There was at this time among the students a club that I also belonged to, but there I recently had hardly set my foot. One day, one of my comrades, Sasha George Wittich, came and asked me to come along to the club, where a little later in the evening, a secret meeting would be held, to discuss some anomalies at the university. I followed. The thing was not in itself so important, it touched a relegation, which at the time was not a rarity, but the reason was this time that the expelled, but among comrades universally popular young man, in a graduation handed down a somewhat careless opinion on sovereign powers principled objectionable as government. The doors closed and the guards were exposed at appropriate points to alert someone danger threatened, because the police bloodhounds sniffed happy about student clubs. Sasha, who was particularly attached to the expelled fellow, opened the meeting and gave a, of aggression and resentment saturated talk over the tank shackles that the university wanted to tie their free students to. This speech was a spark for many of the students and even for me. After preferable's end I went back and thanked Sasha, and said, adding that he in me, could count on a strong supporter of his ideas, yes, if it would also require action, I wanted to join and be with. It will probably entail action, Peter, he said, but yet we are by no means prepared therefore. We must begin by the student circles permeate opinion against repression from our university teachers and even from much higher up. I pressed his hand, and from that moment we were friends who knew we could rely on each other. Some other speakers also performed, and it ended with almost all the currently signed up as members of a secret government that called themselves freedom lovers. The expelled fellow, the son of a wealthy nobleman in Moscow, I won't here in this my story only call him Alexander, was immediately elected as the union's honorary member. Thus arose one of the many small foci of freedom and a sacred fire, which at this time on different localities were lit in Russia, and burned a time, often choked with violence, but then flamed up again with greater fervor, offering cures, where many of Russia's noblest sons brought his goods of freedom, even their lives was offered on the altar. So strong was already then the enthusiasm for Russia's liberation. Freedom Friends Association had under Saska's presidency frequent gatherings, which admittedly was not yet talk of any action policies, but where we fired up ourselves and others for our good thing and pushed leaflets that were distributed among the other students. At one of these meetings, I had reported me as a speaker. I developed a longer speech our program, which was to the university work for thought and word emancipation, which was ultimately aimed at the entire Russian people's liberation from Tsardom and the senior overwhelm's oppression. It is, I said, not only of thought and freedom of speech here at the university, we must work for, our goal is a larger scale. All of our poor people groan under an unbearable oppression exercised by an irresponsible, ignorant and raw officialdom, and supported by an autocracy that rages in bloodthirsty cruelty, without a view of the poor victims of this beast politics are people with an immortal soul, people with the same right to spiritual as well as physical air, light and freedom that they in society are higher ranking. It's a battle to the death against the Tsarist idea we must focus on. What more is, if we are in this battle, at first, with so uneven battle, personally must die, it's okay. For every hero who is killed for the cause of freedom, grows dead out of his tracks. Fatherland requires that we sacrifice our freedom and our lives. Let us do it with glossy determination. Our cause is sacred, we self means nothing. I had scarcely pronounced the last word sooner than the doors burst open and two policemen, accompanied by a dozen gendarmes or police soldiers, entered into the hall. I was immediately arrested. And with me some of those who stood nearest the pulpit, among others, also Sasha. Any resistance was not to think about. We were taken to a police detention center, where we were detained several days before we even subjected to any questioning. Finally, we were taken one morning before the police judge. The hearing was a parody of court hearing, which would have brought our ridicule unless the situation was so serious. Some of the arrested got away with shorter prison sentences, but Sasha and I were sentenced to deportation for 10 years. Siberia was thus the target to which our youthful freedom glow had brought us. Without a change in face, we heard my judgment. Still close to a month we were kept in custody until the court recollected those that would share our fate, and the transport column had time to be organized. It could fill volumes if I would describe in detail only the suffering that was associated with the slow walk on ulcerated feet over Russia's steppes and Siberian wastelands. We were together 50 to 60 unfortunate men, that during whip strokes blow, dragged us forward with time marches on 15 to 20 miles of the endless large swaths way over Nizhny Novgorod, Kazan, Perny by the Uralic forests over West Sibir's tundras to Tobolsk and thence to Kolyvn, which was the goal of our journey. Worse than the actual hard walk, how arduous it was, for us the miserable, squalid hovels, which was made of timber for the purpose to make transport of prisoners, a night quarters. Any more horrid you can hardly imagine than to be packed together in those stinking unsound nests, where we found out ourselves a bed as best we could on the dirty floor, with or without a little straw below us. If it was a nuisance to the poor peasants, who, however, were accustomed to privations of every kind, how could it not be felt for the educated men, who was raised in a certain comfort? And if it was unbearable for us men, how much harder would it not be for the poor women? No small part of our sufferings braced ourselves of the bad diet, which not only was badly cooked, many a time only half cooked, but also of horrid quality and nature. It was really needed appetite, which the constant and hard marches provoked, to bring oneself to eat it. Our column consisted mainly of political prisoners, to which also counted such as FX during intoxication or in despair, had struck a gendarme, military police, or only threatened a local judge. There were grizzled old farmers, rough-built worker, slender young men with white slender hands and a flaming glow in their eyes. The women, 10 or 12 in number, were all between 20 and 30 years, most of them apparently from the affluent middle class. They, like Sasha and I, has been arrested in nihilistic youth clubs, where its warm enthusiasm had fired up many a male minds to infer, and to enter freedom fight. As we went further on, our crowd was increased with new unfortunates, as from other parts of the empire came to our column. In this Nizhny Novgorod, I fastened my attention to a young girl, who was with the young men and were pushed into our ranks. She had a rich dark brown hair, a vigorous mouth closed and big dreamy eyes, who immediately betrayed to she belonged to the class of youth, without regard to their family connection, or their position in life else, had enthusiastically thrown themselves into the revolutionary movement, to be part of the great freedom struggle, that they was already dreaming of, to be such imminent. I was drawn by a strange inner power to go to her side and asked her politely if I could be her helpful. "Thank you," she answered, "I will probably wear my fate on my own shoulders. You are, incidentally, just as helpless as I am." Discipline in our march was not very severe, only if one was not came after. We had the right to go and talk to each other, and if we did not speak so loud that one of the guards belonging to us could hear, we could even confide to each other our previous life stories and the immediate reason for the expulsion. Some were in this respect very communicative, others clenched mouths so that one did not get a word out of them. To the latter category belonged apparently my new acquaintance from Nizhny Novgorod. She was mute and rejection-like, however, without being unkind. But she interested me so that I, in spite of it, as often as I could, sought her out and tried to initiate a call. Gradually thawed her stiffness and she became somewhat more communicative. Her name was Sonia. She was the daughter of a wealthy nobleman which took a large estate near Kostroma. About the reason for her banishment, I had guessed right. Our fate was in that case very similar. With great interest, She heard me talk about the revolutionary, or as it was then called, nihilistic movement among Moscow students. Her dreamy eyes had a dim shine when we came into this topic that was for both of us so dear. What it made me sick inside, that this richly talented, educated woman and luxury-born woman, what she had to suffer during that dreadful march. But the heroism with which she bore her sufferings, made me forget my own. Our journey had begun in the fall. The roads were of the constant rainfall, just dissolved, and ourselves, we were often so drenched that we literally had not a dry thread on the body, and such were we stowed into next night quarters, where we at a log fire was allowed to dry garments for garment. How the air would be in those logments, can more easily be sensed than described. In some places there were separate rooms for men and for women, but in others again, we were pushed into a single large room. Was it strange if Sonia, despite his willpower, in the end could not hold herself up? She fell ill with a fever and was put on one of the big tents with overwrought flatbed trailers accompanying the rest. Among others, also had one of the drivers become sick and so severely that he had to be left behind in the village. I was obliged to take his place, and thus it came about that I had to drive the wagon in which Sonia was sick. I was now in a position to give her all the nursing as the primitive situation did, and felt infinitely happy for what was now to me all the hardships I myself had to endure, and I wore them with the greatest joy because they had brought me together with this woman, who during all that together we had suffered, gradually become dearer to me than freedom. Yes, if I now had had the choice between the pardon and turn back alone, or run on with my precious load, I had not hesitated a moment. So dear she had been to me, she who was lying on the straw mattress with my coat over her. With no word, hardly with a look had I told of my heart's secret. She would not be interfered with anything on my part, this martyr for our holy cause, it was my firm resolve, and therefore I went quietly and overjoyed with reins in hands at the side of the cart. She was, however, after a couple of weeks so restored that she could no longer be rolled, but must regain her place in the columns. I however was still bound by the stuff, where I attended me to my supervisor's great satisfaction. So I was now almost completely divorced from Sonia again. Never could I believe that I would come to mourn of a dear friend's recovery, but I will be honest, I did so really now. Winter came upon us with snow and cold in the Uralic mountains, but it was almost preferable to the rain in the deep muddy roads. During the march we kept always hot and during night, we got enough fuel. But now came a new trial. In Tobolsk, our column should be divided. And a few, and among them Sonia, was sentenced to the mines Omsk, while I contrast with Sasha and most other to Kolyvan. With a limitless pain, I looked to the day when I forever should be separated from her that was my all in this world, and I could finally not restrain the expression of my grief. She whispered a barely audible thanks and gave me her hand, which I passionately pressed. The dreadful day had come. We were gathered in a square at Tobolsk. Horse was shifted. Horses from anew, it was swearing and ranting. Guards had come over brandy and was raw and unruly. A police commissioner came from the registry with a large piece of paper in his hand. He started shouting our names and we were distributed on two columns. Then Sonia's name was read. She approached the police officer who had a ruddy but good-natured look, and said with firmness, "I ask you little father, let me go with the column that goes to Kolyvan." "No, my little sugar, that will I not do, then I would lose service, and that can I not risk. By the way, I will tell you that they are much better in Omsk." Was she not happy to get there? That does not matter. Think of a way to let me come along to Kolyvan. She had spoken so loud that we all heard it. Was it possible? Would she want to? There arose something of cheer in my chest. I stood breathless excitement. The red face pulled in his shaggy hair and was visibly perplexed. "I can at least not determine that, my little dove. I have to ask the governor, but then she must tell me why she wants to change the exile. Such is usually not granted if you do not have good reason. I have the cause that I married to him standing there, Peter Ivanovich, which is sentenced to Kolyvan. Do you understand now?" I uttered a great cry of joy and ran to Sonia. "Yes," I cried, "please do not divide us, we are united for time and eternity."